2. February 2, 1945. Sarah Churchill stood on the deck of the HMS Orion, looking out over the cruisers anchored in the finger-like inlet that formed Malta's Valletta Harbour, as the walls of the ancient city bore down from above. Malta was a rocky fortress of an island off the southern tip of Italy, the city of Valletta seemingly carved directly from the local limestone. The city walls spiraled upward, and within each spiral, the buildings fit together like pieces of a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. The first time Sarah had come to Malta with her father, a year and a half earlier, she was struck by the colour. As an aerial reconnaissance intelligence analyst in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, or WAFS, as the women's branch of the Royal Air Force was known, she had spent 2 years scrutinising photographs of Malta and the Mediterranean so closely she knew them as well as London. But those pictures were black and white. In reality, these homes, churches, and buildings of state glowed with blushing warmth in the morning sunlight. Everything was pink. It was not yet 9:30 a.m., but excited crowds had gathered on both sides of the narrow harbour, wherever they could get a view of the ships moored below, even piling onto the rooftops of buildings that had miraculously survived more than 3,000 air raids during the enemy's relentless 2.5-year bombardment. By the middle of 1942, Malta was the lone speck of an Allied stronghold between Italy and North Africa. This island, just 1/5 the size of London, had become the most bombed spot on Earth. In honour of the Maltese people's fortitude, Britain's King George had awarded them the George Cross, and President Roosevelt had presented them with a hand-drawn scroll of honour. Now, another prize lay in wait, the chance to catch a glimpse of the meeting of the two great leaders for whom they had fought and endured. The moment was imminent. The ship for which they were all waiting would soon steam into port. Usually, crowds made Sarah anxious, which was ironic, considering that before the war she had been a stage actor. But today, the onlookers were the least of her worries. Her father was pacing the deck beside her. As he puffed on his long cigar, little white clouds of smoke followed in his wake. The British delegation had been waiting nearly half an hour for the American ship to appear on the horizon. Half an hour's delay was nothing in the context of transatlantic sea travel, but given her father's multi-month ordeal in securing this meeting, patience had long since worn thin. Across the harbour, the rest of the delegation was gathered along the rail of the Orion's sister ship, the HMS Sirius. The British and American military chiefs of staff were there, as well as Averell Harriman, Harry Hopkins, the American Secretary of State, Edward Stettinius, and the British Foreign Secretary, Anthony Eden, who had experienced a rather rude awakening that morning when the military band assembled on board had kicked off the day's festivities a trifle early, jolting Eden from his bed with a rousing rehearsal of the Star-Spangled Banner. There were arguably better ways to spend one's morning than waiting for a ship to appear, but at least the day was warm. Back in England, 7 inches of snow had fallen, but here the Mediterranean climate was so pleasant and mild that Sarah could leave her greatcoat behind in her cabin. In her neatly tailored WAF uniform, she cut a striking figure beside her father, who was smartly attired as an officer of the Royal Yacht Squadron. Though her ensemble, a blue wool skirt and jacket, was just one of the many uniforms on